Let these be our opening words for today, written by the Reverend Patrick Murphy. We gather as leaders, as servants. We gather as memory, as hope. We gather as family, as pilgrims. We gather as faithful, as skeptics. We gather as action, as reflection. We gather as many as one. As we are, we shall be. As we serve others, so shall we be. Let us take some time now to center ourselves, to find a place in beloved community, to feel at one with one another. And I will offer you some words for your prayer and meditation, then invite you into a period of silence, and then at the time of the music, you have an opportunity to light candles if you wish. So these words by Rebecca Parker. Let us covenant with one another to keep faith with the source of life, knowing that we are not our own. Earth made us. Let us covenant with one another to keep faith with the community of resistance, never to forget that life can be saved from that which threatens it by even small bands of people choosing to put into practice an alternative way of life. And let us covenant with one another to seek an ever deeper awareness of that which springs up inwardly in us, even when our hearts are broken by our own failure or the failure of others cutting into our lives, even when we have done all we can and life is still broken. There is a universal love that has never broken faith with us and never will. Let us follow the tone into the silence. Our first reading today is from the writings of James Luther Adams, Unitarian Universalist prophet, preacher, scholar, and mentor to many of us. This is from his book called The Prophethood of All Believers. Human beings, individually and collectively, become human by making commitments, by making promises. The human being as such, as Martin Buber says, is the promise-making, promise-keeping, the promise-breaking, promise-renewing creature. The human being is the promise-maker, the commitment-maker. The covenant is a covenant of being. It is a covenant with creative, sustaining, commanding, judging, transforming powers which may be interpreted theistically, non-theistically, humanistically. In a religious covenant, the orientation is to something we cannot control, but something upon which we can depend, even for our freedom. The covenant includes a rule of law, but it is not fundamentally a legal covenant. It depends on faithfulness. And faithfulness is nerved by loyalty, by love. Ultimately, the ground of faithfulness is the divine or human love that will not let us go. Here we see the theological basis for accountability by persons and by the church. And our second reading is from a book by Alice Blair Wesley, From the Mists of Time and History. Alice Wesley is a very well-known Unitarian Universalist minister. The center of the free church, the heart of the whole thing, is a promise of fidelity, a covenant which every member makes freely upon joining. Actually, also, each member begins again with, or renews and renegotiates, his or her promise many times in the course of the life of the church, in the privacy of renewed conscience or spiritual growth. Too often, our promise or covenant is implicit, is not consciously explicit. But it doesn't really matter whether it is verbalized. It matters whether it is faithfully meant. Our covenant is our promise that we shall together seek truth and support one another as we dare, whatever the cost, to live by the truths we cannot help believing we have found at any particular time, and to support one another in doubt in these times when we can't find or can't decide what the relevant truth is. The free church is held together by, insofar as we live by, the spirit of this promise. End of the second reading. I'm delighted to be able to welcome Reverend Stephen Jonasson to this pulpit this morning. Many of you know him from work he has done with this congregation in the past. He is the director for larger congregations in the Unitarian Universalist Association, and as such, he consults with a good many congregations across the continent. He was here yesterday providing a terrific opportunity for us to gather in workshop and in keynote and work out some ways that this congregation is aware of what it needs to do before calling your next settled minister. It was a wonderful workshop, and I'm delighted that he can continue his work with us today. So I'm looking forward to hearing about the covenants we keep.
Good morning. It's a delight for me to be here today at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin and to be able to share worship with you and undoubtedly enjoy many rich conversations in between the services. This is one of the Unitarian Universalist Association's flagship congregations. And you really need to know that about yourself. That this is a wonderful congregation with warm and faithful people, which is admired and looked to by Unitarian Universalists across the continent. This is one of our flagships, a beacon of our liberal faith that shines brightly here in what some people might prejudicially consider an unlikely place, but which you know to be a very likely place for a rich and robust expression of our liberal faith. There are people who mistakenly believe that being a Unitarian Universalist means that you can believe and practice anything you want, or everything you want. And although we do tolerate an astonishingly wide latitude in beliefs and practices, it simply isn't true that you can believe or practice anything. No, we are called to believe and practice what we must, what our conscience calls us to believe and to practice. And the gathered religious community helps to keep us honest about that, helps to correct our errors and encourage us in our searching. But a corollary of this misconception is that Unitarian Universalist ministers will marry anyone, a notion that is perpetuated by the fact that our ministers are genuinely reluctant to turn away people when they come to us seeking to be wed. Even though most of us have occasion to do so at some point or other in our careers. When we do say yes, which is almost all of the time, the services we conduct are as wide and varied as the people who come to us. I have personally conducted weddings in public parks and aboard riverboats, on the roof of an art gallery, and in the corner of a restaurant. The services themselves have drawn elements from every one of the world's major religious traditions. They've invoked God's name or shunned her, have been as formal as a Church of England service, or as old, or as refreshing and new and informal as the happy hour along the boardwalk. The couples have been young and old, representative of most every race and creed, and like every Unitarian Universalist minister I know, I happily overlook the question of gender and orientation when two people ask me to be married. However, I have a few prohibitions. I don't take off my clothes. I don't jump out of airplanes. And I don't dive beneath the surface of the water. I know that I have these prohibitions precisely because I have had requests for all three. A couple of them more than once. And I have always declined. I do sometimes conduct services for couples I don't really like. Although most of the time, such couples select someone else to officiate because they typically don't really like me either. My point in sharing all of this is simple. Every wedding I have solemnized has been remarkably unique, and the diversity of people and services has been amazing and beautiful and delightful. But at some point, in every marriage service, I have said the same 10 words just before pronouncing the couple married. May these two people keep this covenant they have made. You are probably wondering why I was going on about weddings when I proclaimed to be speaking about covenant this morning. Well, this is why. Because marriage is a covenant. And these are the only words that I say in every marriage service I have ever done. May these two people keep this covenant they have made. In modern America, marriage is the form of covenant with which most people are familiar, at least in passing. And I like to use marriage as an illustration to help us understand other covenants because while it is a legal covenant, a contract, if you will, we all know that marriage at its best is more, much, much more than just a legal matter. In the best marriages, there is a transcendent quality of love present, blended almost imperceptibly with everyday expectations of faithfulness and mutual support. But the institution of marriage is just one of the covenants we humans strive to keep. We keep covenants in the law. We keep covenants when it comes to real estate. And we keep covenants at church. In its simplest form, a covenant is simply an agreement. Indeed, the word itself derives from the old French word meaning precisely that. Of course, it's an agreement that conveys a promise, but an agreement nonetheless. And it just so happens that our Unitarian churches are covenantal rather than creedal. You've undoubtedly heard people say over and over again how ours is a non-creedal faith, and you may at times have wondered what that really means or why it even matters. Or perhaps you've just been rather proud, perhaps, that Unitarians don't have a prescribed creed, a set of beliefs to which you must agree to become a part. But most of us don't give a lot of attention to the alternative to being creedally organized, which is to be covenantal, to gather together in the same way that couples, young and old, gather together in marriage. The Unitarian historian Conrad Wright points out the distinction between the creedal and the covenantal. The covenantal form of faith says, we unite, as opposed to the creedal form, which says, we believe. We unite. We gather together. We share this community and this journey with one another. These are all covenantal affirmations, and this is, by the way, nothing new. For us, it goes directly back to the Salem Covenant of 1629, the words of which might be a little shocking to some present-day Unitarian Universalists, but they're worth listening to nonetheless. When the people of Salem gathered together to form their church in that year in the 17th century, a congregation which today is a Unitarian Universalist congregation, they had a simple declaration after saying that strangers were welcome. They had a simple declaration of what bound them together. It was this: we covenant with the Lord and with one another, and do bind ourselves in the presence of God to walk together in all his ways, according as he is pleased to reveal himself unto us in his blessed word of truth. Now that may sound just a little more conventional than some of you may feel comfortable with, but think about it for a moment. There is no "we believe" statement there. There is a profession that these people would bind themselves together in the presence of God to walk together. That's a remarkably refreshing, inviting way to organize a congregation. And it is at the heart of the congregational traditions in general and of Unitarian Universalism in particular. A church united by a covenant is made up of people who have made commitments to one another, says Conrad Wright. Joining a church should not be quite the same thing as joining the National Geographic Society. The roots of this tradition, though, are in fact biblical, and they can be traced back to before the earliest years of the Hebrew people, who came to believe that God had entered into a covenant with their ancestors and with them. This covenant is seen in God's promise to humanity after the flood, which was symbolized by the rainbow. It's seen in God's promise to redeem the nation of Israel. And it is seen in God's general promise of salvation to the faithful, as taught in both the Old and New Testaments, which are sometimes also called the Old and New Covenants. So we shouldn't be too presumptuous in imagining that this way of organizing religious communities spiritual communities, congregations of friends, is somehow brand new or particularly innovative. It is an ancient notion, even as we have modified it. Some who don't particularly like Unitarian Universalists might say stripped it of some of its original majesty. But I glory in what we've done with it. Grindal Reynolds was the secretary and administrative head of the American Unitarian Association from 1881 until his death in 1894. In a sermon he delivered during the last year of his life, he reflected back on the history of the Unitarian stream of our faith in America and its Congregationalist roots. Early Congregationalism, he observed, did not make its church covenants doctrinal. While there can be little doubt that the early Congregationalists were Christians of Calvinist temperament and doctrines through and through, professing the dogmas of their faith with a terrible sincerity. Nevertheless, they did not put them into their church covenants. And that is remarkable. As evidence, Reynolds cites that uncomplicated covenant adopted by the first church in Salem. We covenant with the Lord and with one another, and do bind ourselves in the presence of God to walk together in all his ways. While asserting that no one doubts that the writers of these covenants were sincere, and very likely stiff and narrow Calvinists, Grindal Reynolds observed that they wrote better than they knew. Their covenants had in them the element of elasticity. It was possible for men and women to accept them and grow. Ministers and people might and did differ, and yet they could walk together. No better proof is needed than the fact that the very churches on which these early covenants were first proclaimed are today proudly labeled as Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist. By the 18th century, though, there had grown up a disposition to narrow the old compacts, to define them, to give them special doctrinal meaning, to change them, in short, from covenants into creeds. In Reynolds' estimate, this creedal drift is what eventually led to the Unitarian controversy, since the narrowing of covenants into creeds made it impossible for Arminians and Calvinists, Unitarians and Trinitarians, rationalists and traditionalists, however sincere and earnest, and however truly disciples, to walk together. So it was that the Unitarian movement emerged as an embodied protest against this narrowing tendency. And we have eschewed creeds ever since, opting to radically accept the covenantal ideal in organizing our congregations. And that is liberating. It is elastic, as Grindal Reynolds said. It allows us to grow together without worrying about getting doctrine perfect. Unlike creeds, we needn't strive for perfection in articulating our covenants with one another. They are necessarily and gloriously imperfect affirmations. Today, religious liberals find it almost laughable to reflect back on the pretentious language of the historic creeds, which presume to declare for all time that which is absolutely true, but which are so obviously the product of the times in which they were created, in their worldview, in their assumptions, and in their language. Covenants are liberating in comparison. In my home congregation up north, very far up north, where they just had 10 inches of snow since I left, the covenant we say together each and every Sunday was penned by James Vela Blake. Love is the spirit of this church, we say, and service is law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Period. Full stop. Nothing else required to belong. That is a liberating and open affirmation. Everything we really need to be a faithful community of seekers is there, and nothing that gets in the way of our being together and growing together is present. Blake substituted love for God in this covenant, although that is arguably no substitution at all if you accept the biblical teaching that God is love. However, Blake's formulation made matters easier for those of us with doubts about divinity, without excluding those who continue to cherish more traditional understandings of the divine. He radically humanized the covenant, and you need to know that he did this in 1893. It was not always popular. It's not always been accepted. In 1893, it was shocking to some, and yet how the words sing to us today. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This was covenant enough to bind Unitarians and later Unitarian Universalists together. And an important aspect of being a covenantal faith is for us to understand that forgiveness is also an essential part. Since we routinely fail to live up to our aspirations, the aspirations in the covenants we express, the promises we make to one another through them. As Martin Buber observed, humankind is the promise-making, promise-keeping, promise-breaking, and promise-renewing creature. This reality requires a rich capacity for forgiveness. In more recent years, though, many of our congregations have found it helpful to humanize our covenants still further by adopting behavioral covenants which members agree to. Beyond the covenant which begins, "We unite," the covenant which brings us together, we go on to make promises about how we will be together. There's an apocryphal story about one of our congregations where a member of the congregation was speaking while another one jumped up and said, "Why don't you sit down and shut up?" This happens, my friends, but it's not what we aspire to. And it is not what we consider behaviorally acceptable. I've been heckled during sermons. I've seen members of our congregations treat one another rudely. I've seen people be dismissive and difficult. We are human. And at one level, it's okay for us to be human. At another, we aspire to greater dignity in how we express our humanity. And so some of our congregations have extended their covenants to include certain behavioral norms. One excellent model was adopted by the members of the First Unitarian Church in Victoria, British Columbia, who said, "We agree to treat ourselves and each other fairly and respectfully. We are committed to improving the quality of our lives by supporting one another's self-development, spiritual growth, and the use of our skills and talents in fulfilling and responsible ways. This covenant of healthy relations goes on to cover an affirmation of selfhood and the importance for each of us in seeking the truth and seeking to grow as human beings. But it also talks about the responsibilities of church members to their minister, of church members to the staff, of church members to their board, and most importantly of all, of church members toward one another and to the larger community of which they are a part. In other words, this kind of behavioral covenant, a covenant of healthy relations, seeks to help people identify those positive and wholesome norms that would allow them to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to be genuinely helpful to one another. It's ultimately about living out our affirmation of the worth and dignity of persons, the principle which I believe lies at the heart of our faith. As Alistair Wesley says, the covenants we keep reflect our promise that we shall together seek truth and support one another as we dare, whatever the cost, to live the truths we cannot help believing. Believing we have found at any particular time. And to support one another in doubt in those times when we can't find or can't decide what the relevant truth is. And so it is that the genius of our liberal religious faith is that when we gather together, we say not we believe, but rather we love.
And let these be our parting words. Go forth into the world in peace. Be of good courage. Hold fast that which is good. Render to no one evil for evil. Strengthen the faint-hearted. Support the weak. Help the afflicted. Love all beings. Serve the Most High, rejoicing in the power of the Spirit. Alleluia. Amen. Blessed be.